something metallic clacking against his broken teeth when he opened wide. Another sense memory flooded back from his one off-world trip. He'd picked up a bacterial infection that had left his limbs raw and scabbing. It had earned him an hour in a Bacta tank, something uncommon on Tatooine. He'd worn a breather mask then. He wore something like that now, only tinny and cold to his lips. The light above disappeared. Slowly, the face of a Tusken came into view and vanished. No! He pushed down with his hands, lifting his torso. He saw his legs, now bandaged. He felt the gloves on his fingertips. He felt the shroud on his face, and the metallic eyepieces against his eyelids. Merciful universe, no! Another Tusken stepped into view.
Aringalt.
Orin heard it as an animal grunt. But it was his name. And it was definitely the one-eyed Tusken he tried to ram. Plugeye.
I am a Yark,
the Tusken warlord said.
You lives, Aringalt.
He clutched at the bumpy surface beneath his body. He realized he was lying some distance off the ground atop a rectangular pile of stones.
This is my son's burial platform,
a Yark said. Morin simply shook his head, his eyes too dry for tears. He had seen the things before. A Yark grabbed at his shoulders.
You have work.
She turned him. Orin saw the familiar stone pillars go past until finally he faced a shorter metallic cylinder. It was a vaporator. He knew the model by sight. It was the vaporator the Tuskens had stolen from Wild Ulbrich. But instead of gutting it for metals, the warrior and her companions had placed it upright. Now heaving, they brought it closer. As it approached, he realized the funereal bier had been expanded to become something else. It wasn't to be Orin's grave. It was his work platform.
You gives us water,
a Yark said.
And you will be fed.
Orin struggled. The parts of his body that could still move were suffocating. They were so tightly wound beneath the wrappings.
You will be fed. And we moves you when we move. And you will live while we have water.
Orin heard his breath rasping louder and louder. No! 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 Orin thought it but didn't say it. For no was a word. And hearing his voice through the mouthpiece would confirm what he knew. That he was now one of them. A sand person. He resolved never to speak again. The first sun was slipping behind the cliffs to the west when two hovercraft arrived at the foot of Ben's Hill. Glomer had kept Annalene's battered old landspeeder and the light van, which Tar would need to run the store. In exchange, he'd provided her with two of her souped-up sport speeders, which she figured would come in handy in the desert, or wherever they and Ben ended up. She chuckled to herself as she parked. She'd seen Ben on a hoverbike, but had no idea if he drove a landspeeder. Well, she'd have time to find out and teach him if he didn't. She stepped out of the vehicle, its back seat packed to overflowing with hastily packed luggage and goods. Across from her, Jabe and Callie emerged from their similarly loaded repulsor craft. So much stuff, but so little, too, worth taking away from a lifetime. It was sad, Annalene thought, but also refreshing. Jabe's face fell as he looked up at the hut.
This is it? He still doesn't have a door,
Callie noted. Annalene's daughter had been quiet since closing the livery. But seeing Ben emerge from the home cheered her up, as it did Annalene. Welcome, Ben said, walking down the slope. Instead of his cloak, he wore a white shirt with long cuffs and light gray trousers, an ensemble she hadn't seen him in before. He looked refreshed, as if he'd somehow gotten some sleep in the few hours since she'd seen him. He carried a small beige backpack over his shoulder. Anna Lean stepped toward him, glowing. But before she could reach him, Ben Ziopis trotted from inside the house, bleeding to him. "Ah," he said, setting down the backpack. "I found them on the way home." "The gang's all here," Anna Lean said affectionately. Ben looked up. "Are your affairs settled?" "As much as they'll ever be," she said. In the vehicle, she had hard currency from her stash, and Glomer's payment to her electronic account could be accessed in Bastien or Mos Eisley. It was enough to live on for a long time, especially out here. She didn't know if that was Ben's plan. He had only told her to pack for time away. Wherever it was, though, she felt safe in assuming they'd be together. As Callie knelt to nuzzle Rue and the baby, Ben studied Jabe. "Are you all right, son?" he asked.
"Yeah, I am. I want to thank you for helping us. And for saving me last night."
Jabe looked down, shamefaced.
"I didn't deserve it."
Ben shook the boy's hand.
"You were only a few steps down the wrong path."
He looked Jabe in the eye.
"You were desperate for something to do. But someone I respect once told me that wise people never make desperate decisions."
He reflected for a moment, then smiled.
"Actually, he phrased it a lot differently from what I just said. But the advice is sound."
Jabe smiled. Anna Lean beamed. She looked back at the land speeders.
"It'll be dark soon. Should we unload?"
"No," Ben said, turning toward the pouch on the ground.
"That can wait until Mos Eisley." Callie's eyes widened. "Mos Eisley?"
"I know we were just there yesterday," he said, lifting the backpack. "It certainly doesn't seem like yesterday. But there's a transport preparing to leave from Docking Bay 56 the day after tomorrow, and passage is booked."
Anna Lean gawked.
"How is that possible?"
Before Ben could answer, Callie hugged him, just hard enough to cause him to drop the pouch again. He laughed.
"Don't you want to hear the destination?"
"Not really," Jabe said, stepping back and slapping hands triumphantly with his sister.
"The first stop is Bastien," Ben said. "The planet, not the city."
"First